Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome everybody to They Might Be Mariners. We are returning at last. We are Lookout Landings, Prospects and Miners podcast. It has been a lengthy winter, but we are back at last to bring you some pre-spring training Lookout Landing top 30 prospects.
Prospect season list.
Yeah, prospect list season.
Baseball season.
Yeah.
The sun is shining outside my window. This is all very exciting.
Yeah, there's snow on the ground, but there's sun in our hearts, and we are delighted to chat about our top 30 list and how some of the big names and some of the lesser known names may have broken out differently for us than for our overall rankings. So we're gonna go deep into that. But first, just a real quick check-in with you guys. As usual, you've heard we have Kate Prusser as well as Joe Doyle here. Joe, which of the new newly high A minor league teams are you most excited to hopefully check out in the neighborhood whenever that becomes possible?
I'm really excited to go to more Aqua Sox games. I know that's like the slam dunk pick, but I used to go up there and we would catch just like new draftees and kind of, you know, guys that probably won't make it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like Julio's gonna be there in May. Give me all that.
Yeah, it's pretty neat stuff. I mean,
I know. Does anyone ever have a house that with a room in it that they would not mind like just letting me live in for a while? So I could just, because the only bad part about Everett for me coming from West Seattle is getting up there.
Yeah,
but I feel similarly to Joe. Like, I'm pretty much gonna want to just live in Everett for.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I mean, that is likely what it's their opening day rotation in Everett's going to be: Emerson Hancock, George Kirby, Brandon Williamson, Isaiah Campbell.
Yeah,
110. Like
Levi Stout.
Levi Stout, maybe. Like, maybe he's in Modesto just because he hasn't pitched that much. But like, could be. Who knows?
Oh,
I mean, we don't know where these guys are at. But
too,
like,
many good pitcher problems.
Okay. Yeah, like that is. The you know, not all these guys are going to turn out, but like the potential for every rotation in the Mariners minor leagues right now is insane. It's so fun to think, oh, every day when you flip on MILB TV, there's a game worth watching. There might be, yes, multiple games worth watching.
Which,
and hopefully,
again,
Everett actually can get a TV set up. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm assuming with the whole like bringing everything under MLB's control, that was something they were,
yeah,
going for, was standardizing the quality of video.
Yeah.
This is really not fair to have some affiliates have tricked out professional settings like the Dodgers affiliates
Tulsa.
Did.
Yeah, I would watch a Tulsa game over before I'd watch a Rangers game.
Yeah, seriously. Absolutely. I mean, the quality was just, and their announcers, and it's great to see, like, too, as more people watch more minor league games, get to see, like, all the talent that's in the minor leagues for broadcasters, which are generally way younger. I don't know if I would say more diverse, because that's definitely something that MLB has attacked on the national level, I think, is trying to get at least black broadcasters in, but women, definitely more women in the minor leagues broadcasting. So I'm really hoping that our own Keaton Galugli gets a chance to shine a little, because he's so good and so, I think, just so underappreciated.
Yeah, creative.
But every broadcaster in our system is straight up bananas awesome.
So. Yeah. Just real quick before we get into the top prospects, and we've basically known this. I think we even talked about this on the last time we recorded They Might Be Mariners, which I don't want to look when it was. But the breakdown, for those who haven't, you know, who check out during the winter, the Mariners are going to have their Dominican Summer League, just like every other team. The Mariners are going to have their Arizona League at the complex, which is sort of informal, free to attend if you live in Arizona, you know, pending COVID. And then there's the Modesto Nuts have dropped from high A to low A, but there's no more short season. It's just full season baseball for everyone.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you're going to have that Modesto team is going to be in a newly configured, technically still the California League, but due to, like, naming rights, they're currently, what, they're like the California, it's just like low A West. It's some terrible name that, like, hopefully they get.
Yeah, I'm really hoping
out.
That the names are temporary, because like the Majestic Pacific Coast League, which I have always loved as a name and has a ton of history behind it, and I think PCL really means something.
Absolutely.
And I've always somehow in my mind connected it to the Coast Starlight, which is the Amtrak train that runs Seattle, Tacoma, Portland. You know that?
Oh, yeah. I've taken it many a time.
It's a beautiful, beautiful terrain. So, yeah, just that it evokes kind of this name that connects us to our history.
It's got an ethos. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really hoping that in some form that comes back. And also because right now I think they're called AAA West, which is absolute garbage. Can't stand. They're going to have to change that, right?
Well, I mean, in fairness, like the grim part of this has been that 38 teams, I think it was ultimately, was it 40 or 38 teams ultimately got fully, 40 teams got axed from full affiliation, and several of those teams, like a dozen or two dozen, got reincorporated as you know, some form of like draft league or summer ball league. We'll see. The West Virginia Power, unfortunately, were one of those organizations who sort of doesn't have a place right now. But yeah, so we you know, we obviously feel for them and for my, you know, wide swaths of the country where there's just no longer affiliated baseball. But the
Pacific Northwest is in a, we are in a, I mean, we're kind of spoiled.
Yeah. We have one of the best affiliate setups outside of Arkansas, which is obviously kind of a haul, but we have one of the best affiliate setups out there, as with both Everett and Tacoma being so close.
Well, not even that, but like if you're just a baseball fan that lives in the state of Washington, like you can drive 3.5 hours and have access to 7 different affiliated full season teams now.
Yeah.
Which is like, fantastic, because I feel like Washington really gets the short shrift where, like, prospects are considered, you know, we're not considered a baseball hotbed, but it is exciting. It's a little bit of a bummer because I was looking at Darren Willman, who, if you don't follow him, is an excellent, like, largely does data visualization of baseball, so, like, pretty pictures. on Twitter.
It's cool. It's really cool.
It is really cool. And just did a visualization of the minor league affiliates map with like overlapping by the leagues and everything. And it's stunning to see what a donut hole we've created with like Colorado. Colorado is a huge state.
Yeah.
And there are no minor league teams in it. Like, nothing in Kansas, because I think the Wichita Wind Surge are no longer a thing, right? That's going to be their
Nothing. There's nothing in the...
There's just nothing in the middle. Yeah, it's a donut hole. Yeah. So, and then obviously, like, up north, although even... You still have the Northeast, and you have the Northwest now. But yeah, just that whole center of the country is just a... giant sucking hole for minor league baseball, and that really, I mean, people live there, like people who I assume would want to see some baseball live there, so it really sucks for them.
You know, certainly we have come out in the Pacific Northwest generally pretty well. I mean, the fact that, like you said, Joe, like they're gonna be real prospects in the Mariners organization, and you know, for every organization, at not only Rainier's games, but at Hops, you know, Hillsboro Hops games, at Spokane games, at Tri-City games, at Eugene game, or no, Eugene Emeralds are a
Hillsboro.
Hillsboro is out there.
Yeah, Hillsboro.
But,
yeah.
Is Vancouver still in it?
Yeah, Vancouver Canadiens. Yeah. They're still there.
That's another one that just does overwhelming. I mean, they sell out their games. Oh, so yeah. Now that they're going to have like higher level prospects, I have no idea what's going to happen there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously the challenge is certainly weather, but like it'll be fine. And like,
yeah, I am really wondering what like April in Everett games are going to be like, because they're not great at T-Mobile, and there's a roof, so...
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, that certainly remains to be seen, but I think it's, you know, I am excited for, you know, I lived for 5 years, went to school and lived for a little bit longer in Portland, down in Oregon, and, like, not having big league baseball there is, like... It's pretty goofy, but like it's a legitimate reason why I don't want to live there long term. But like having high quality minor leagues baseball much closer, like to so much of the state and of the region, is really exciting. So I'm excited to see more of that.
On the other hand, I'm really annoyed that this setup emboldens the Rockies to just do whatever the shit they want. No, seriously, because like, that team has drawn, I have been saddled with writing about the Rockies for the Baseball Prospectus preview series, and I was just kind of doing a dig on the team, who, like, I always think of having existed because they came into baseball about the same time as my awareness of baseball did, but they really didn't, and they were, like, just sold out the joint for the first 5-10 years.
They have amazing attendance. 98,
they led all of Major League Baseball, and you're just starting to see things dip. But people there want baseball so badly that, like, the Rockies kind of have them over a barrel, and it sucks.
Is there... What? We don't need to go too far in this, but you mentioned there's nothing in Colorado. So the Rocky Mountain vibes that were in Colorado Springs, they're gone. What, there's Albuquerque, there's Salt Lake City still. Wasn't there a PCL team that was in Colorado?
The Sky Sox.
Thank you. Yeah, and they got axed. They got iced.
Well, they got axed before all of this because the park factors were just so insane. And it was a Colorado feeder team, but I think at the time it was maybe like a White Sox, and it was so extreme that it was really it made sense for that to be a Colorado feeder team because you're playing in similar conditions to what you'll see at Coors. Right. But when it switched affiliations and went to the White Sox, it was kind of a disaster for them. I mean, it's a little like, I imagine Dickie Stevens has dinged our prospects in some way.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about those prospects.
Yeah, let's talk about our own team.
So what we're going to do here is we're gonna run through the top 30. And obviously we're not going to go in depth on every player. But, you know, we will start real quickly because we got some questions and we're going to weave those questions in. And thank you to everyone who asked. So we're going to start here with a few questions we got about some interesting players who didn't quite cut the top 30 here. And first up, we got a question from Mariners GM Jerry himself.
Whoa, Jerry.
Yeah, we love that. At GM Mariners on Twitter. How close was Adam Machko or Adam Macko?
I believe he's Americanized it to Macko, but I will never stop calling him Machko. Because that is our precious, precious, Slovakian? Yeah, that is a precious cultural heritage that I refuse to erase.
Slovakian played for went to an elementary school that had a T-ball team, played T-ball, moved to Ireland, and continued.
Played somehow for a team called the Mariners in Ireland. Yeah. I mean,
this all sounds just normal to me.
Yeah.
Also, he's grown an incredible head of lettuce. If you've seen pictures of him lately, flow is out of control.
That's fabulous.
There's some strong Eastern European genes just creating this like golden sheafs of wheat. Like it's pretty fantastic.
Well, Jerry DePoto themselves, aka also, you know, on their alt, obviously at Mariners or at GM Mariners, asks a pair of questions. How close was Adam Machko to cracking the top 30? Here he's throwing fairly hard with some solid off-speed stuff. Seems like a young lefty to keep an eye on. Now, going to our sort of collective rankings here, I believe, Joe, you had Machko the highest. You had him in your top 30. And
Joe
I
had
probably
him 28.
Had him, yeah, I believe I would have had him right outside my top 30. But
and among those of us who actually voted, he did come out with an aggregate score of 33. I had him a little lower, but I might reconsider. I had him closer to 40, but I might reconsider that with the new reports coming out. I bumped Taylor Dollard up over him. He was right in that next five.
I bumped. I did my list probably 6 weeks ago or so, and I bumped him a couple of weeks ago as well. I have him at like number 20 right now. So some of the new information that's come out about the velo spike and the command of four pitches, like especially with him being a shorter pitcher that gets a lot of hop on his fastball. I think he's the type of arm that Jerry and the player development staff can work with.
Yeah, I think, frankly, it's not super fair to him, but like there are so many interesting pitchers in the organization, and a benefit to him is that he is so young relative to the rest of the group. But like, they just need to get him innings so we can we can see, you know, at least for us, you know, to see. I think for them, a big thing, honestly, like those high school draftees or those very young draftees, it's not as big a deal for them to not get, you know, the reps for the last year and a half or so, because so much of it is about building strength and building themselves physically into professional pitchers. So hopefully that is something that's able to sustain, because it did look promising, like you said, Joe. Another high school arm who the Mariners took was Michael Limoncelli out of Horseheads, New York. Mariners GM also was curious about what, if anything, we'd heard about Limoncelli's recovery from Tommy John surgery, which was known at the time of his draft, or I believe it was known at the time of his draft that he was going to need Tommy John. So the Mariners took him knowing they would need to be rehabbing him, which I believe he has been doing lately. Joe, you wrote about Limoncelli after they took him with a good deal of enthusiasm, because he was a 2019 pick who was one of the more high upside picks the Mariners have made in their first 10 rounds. So is there anything you've heard about him?
Yeah, I really like Mako, or not Mako, Limoncelli out of in 2019. He was like that. He was that sleeper for me. I just fell in love with the curveball and the frame. And I actually spoke with Limoncelli earlier this week, and he's back to, he says he's back to 100% from the Tommy John surgery. He's been throwing bullpens at about 80%, and they're gonna ramp him back up to full strength max effort throwing here in the next couple of weeks. He's actually been working with Eric Cressy, one of the better pitching coaches in baseball, and prior to his time with the Yankees. So this summer, so that should be really good. I think he's going to be one to watch this year, and I would love to see him get a little bit of time in low A. So we'll see how far along his arm is.
There are so many fun young guys who we just have not seen. Like Limoncelli is definitely one. Machko is definitely one. There are guys that I follow them all on Instagram, and they pop up once in a while, and I'm like, oh right, you. Like, what's his name? He's got a funny name. I'll think of it in a little bit. I have not heard of him in a long time. But there are just, I mean, there's so many guys. And guys, Connor Phillips I would even put in this group a little bit. Yeah. Even though we had him significantly higher as far as, like, an arm who could, I know you're super high on him, Joe. Like, there's another arm who could really pop, who could really make some noise. Levi Stout, I think, fits in that category too, even though we've had him in the organization a little longer. He's a college guy, so he's a little more well known.
Sam Carlson. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And I'm really excited to see Caden Polkovic too. He really impressed me at the alternate training site, and he just feels to me like a guy that's going to move really, really quick.
I want to say I have a couple sleepers, too, who are, again, guys who, like, maybe pitched some in Everett, but...
Wake them up!
We had Tim Elliott on our list as somebody who's had a lot of really good results. At the lower levels, we're going to see if the stuff translates into the higher levels. He's an SEC arm, so, you know, it could just be that he's overpowering this lower-level competition, but... really good strikeout to walk ratios. And then obviously one of our favorites is Jared Bayless, who's just been working his ass off, even though he was not invited to the alternate site. Was he invited to the alternate site? He might have been.
I don't believe
not
so.
Not the alternate site, sorry. You mean the instructional league? Yeah.
I don't think he was. I believe he was invited to Dallas Baptist
University. Yes, I think that's right. I think he is literally... been cooling his heels, but just again another guy kind of like Wyatt Mills, who I wrote my 40 on in 40 on today, just didn't get picked, didn't get selected, and so has really redoubled that time into just working on his own and working his butt off, and pretty excited to see what he does this year. Travis Kuhn is another one who, again, like, just played for a little while. And again, this is just all through following their social media, but he's been getting after it every day. He's got, like, an Alta Villa build now. He's just lifts super heavy things, and I think has punched up his velo some. So there are some real deep sleepers in addition to the guys we have. I mean, the pitching depth, I think, in this organization right now, definitely the best I've ever seen it, and... I would put it up with anyone in the majors.
I would agree. I think that's a fair framework. I will only list one name really in terms of a sleeper. It's not really that much of a sleeper, but I really like Alberto Rodriguez, the outfielder who the Mariners got back as the main return for Taiwan Walker, and from the Blue Jays. And I most of it is based around, I already liked his profile. I liked sort of the power speed combo. I think he's probably corner outfield, but I still like what he can do from the little bits that I've seen. And it is promising, at least, that they have been hyping him up as having improved his physicality. So that's encouraging there. All right, well, let's...
Tyler Driver. I didn't even mention him. He wasn't even the one I was trying to think of with the funny name, but he's yet another one. I'm just scrolling through my Instagram right now, trying desperately to figure out this kid's name.
Well, you will eventually come across it, but in the meantime, we're going to go into our top 30. Starting with five players here, we've got third baseman Milcar Perez, right-handed pitcher Devin Sweet, right-handed pitcher Tim Elliott, shortstop slash infielder Donovan Walton, and outfielder George Feliz. I love the sort of back end of the top 30 because you really get the most disparate types of players here. We've got two teenagers, a pair of early 20s righty pitchers who might be starters, probably relievers, but who knows. And then we've got a guy who has made his big league debut and is sort of trying to figure out what their lot in Major League Baseball is going to be.
Dutch Landis. It's Dutch Landis. All right.
There you
Jeez,
go.
Kate.
Continue on. Sorry.
We should have presented our top 414 prospects.
I'm just saying, like, the organization has dudes on dudes on dudes. There are dudes who I thought would be dudes who aren't even with us anymore.
No,
so.
I mean, this is the thing, though. It's like, there's a reasonably high likelihood that, you know, three of the four or four of the four dudes that you just mentioned, that I just mentioned, Joe, that you just mentioned, don't make it. But the fact that those people would have been
top 20,
like top 20, seriously, like 2 or 3 years ago, like that's where
I mean,
it was.
Just the scraping yeah, of trying to make prospect clay.
Right, like
some of the guys we talked about, and it was always just like relievers, fourth
outfielders.
It was
always relievers.
Yeah, like 85 Parker Markels and Ashton Godot. Like, oh, yeah, you're 27, but like now you're throwing 94, 95. So, and you like have sort of got a slider, like, you know, and that is useful. Like, you want to have those guys, but you want to have those guys as like the 45th most interesting person.
Yeah, there were times when we were
the 20th.
When we were offloading Seth Elledge, and the Mariner fans were like, "No, yeah, that's the top of the system.
Okay,
what are we
me, that was,
doing?"
Okay, that was me. but no, I mean,
it was the top of the system.
Seth
Elledge
at the
top of
the
system.
J.P. Sears, I was, well, I mean, that was the cursed Nick Rumbelow deal too. So let's ignore that.
Nick Rumbelow is a perfect example. Like, we get to watch Nick Rumbelow debut this year.
Ooh. Oh my god, it was just so much trying to get yourself hyped up about stuff. The only one who I wish we had back was Noah Zavalis, who was a Harvard
guy, boy. The Harvard, yeah.
You guys know,
and I think is doing pretty well for the Brewers. But
there was a point in the not too distant future where Max Posey was a top six prospect.
Talk about cursed deals. I'm sorry, we're getting so off topic, but yes, that Max Posey and your boy John, what was his name? Shea Simmons. Oh, I really thought Shea Simmons was going to be a thing.
I was so hyped. We had the dinosaur graphic. Joe, that was before your time. But
Okay, so we'll jump into prospects in like 2 seconds. But, you know, so if you've read our top 20 prospects this year, and it's like 11 through 20 is fun. Like, there is legitimate upside there. All of the names I'm about to read were top 20 prospects in 2017.
Oh, Joe.
Wyatt Mills, Seth Elledge, Rob Whalen, Matt Festa, Oliver Jaski, Max Posey, and Art Warren.
Where the fuck is Oliver Jaski? He's still around, isn't he?
I don't think he is.
Did they trade him?
He was on the restricted list for a while. And
that
I don't
seems,
think he came back and
pitched. Oh, he does say Oliver Jaski retired on his MLB page.
Yeah.
Okay. June
That's
3rd.
Seven relievers. Yeah. That's seven relievers in our top 20.
Yeah. I mean, it was bad, Joe.
It was bad.
also, so, Nick Wells and his broken ass arm was in the top 30.
Listen,
we got something
out
of him, though.
We did get something for Nick
I'm
Wells.
I'm just saying, like, I liked Nick Wells, but he also had a broken arm. And they were like, well, what's behind it?
We'll take that anyway.
He's the only reliever with a broken arm, one and a half arm.
Okay, I want a little bit of rapid fire here because I want to ask a couple. We got a couple good questions that I think fit in.
Yeah, are we at the part where I get to dump on Keith Law's rankings yet?
Yes, I guess. So this is, we got a couple questions, so I'm going to blend this. There's one from at dog206, a lifelong John Donovan fan on Twitter, as well as Nick Fielden at Nickel FLDN. Couple Keith Law questions. So we'll go with at dog 206 is first. Keith Law said on February 15th that the M system isn't very deep. However, as GM Jerry DePower, Jerry DePoto has churned through lower level prospects and trades while at least leaving the elite guys alone to potentially help the big league club.
I think he's wrong. Yes. Keith's been doing
this
for a long time.
He's objectively wrong about this, though, right? Like this is not homerism.
You can look at the Mariners farm system, and it's hard to argue that there's not 15 big leaguers in the top 15 prospects, or at least like a more reasonable expectation of a big leaguer in the top 15 prospects. There, he's got teams ranked, you know, in the top five that they have like eight guys that might be big leaguers.
He's got Arizona ahead of us, and as far as I can tell, their system is Corbin Carroll. End of list. Like,
yeah, I mean, they've got a few dudes, but they're actually the one I was talking about. Like, they have like seven or eight guys that was
definitely the one that jumped out to me as well. That
it's a weird. I mean, Keith Law, with all due respect to Keith Law, he was the guy that said before the 2018 draft that there's no. What did he say exactly? He said, there's not a chance in hell that Jared Kelnick is a five-tool player. Like, you just got to take it with a grain of salt. That would be my opinion. I don't think there's any way Seattle's outside of the top five.
There was a good argument in one of the comments when I wrote up that the Mariners were number two in Baseball America's organizational rankings, which obviously is they have a very different look at the system. That pointed out that Law's criteria is very much to, like, and I think that this is true, to what is going to be impact, like, what is major league ready talent. He prides proximity a lot over anyone else. And he does kind of look at, like, positionally rather than looking at the players themselves. It's extremely idiosyncratic. He prides himself on that. He likes that he's the low guy on Nick Madrigal, on Drew Waters. Like, yeah. I just think you have to understand. He has, I think, very much a bias against a certain player type, and it is the Nick Madrigal, it is the Drew Waters, and it's Jared Kelnick, too, in some way. Like,
by that same token, the Diamondbacks might have, like, the youngest top 10 ever. Like, Corbin Carroll, I'm not even going to list him out.
He's like a teenager.
Yeah, these guys are not even close to making their debut. So, I don't know. Keith Law always has
Idiosyncratic is a nice way to put it. But yeah, and I mean, again, when you're trying to distinct yourself in an industry where a lot of people say the same kinds of things, there's a certain cachet in being a niche voice or whatever. I just think it's like pretty based on a criteria that is not what I would consider well-rounded.
The point that you both made, and Joe, I think you hit on it in particular about the Mariners, like how they compare to in Law's rankings, particularly to some of the other organizations ahead of them. It doesn't exactly make sense, at least with my understanding of some of the players in their organization versus other organizations. Like, I do agree that the depth of the Mariners at certain positions is an issue, and that it is the weak point of the org, that they're really dependent on, you know, a few of their big sort of big deal names turning out well, but
and then just drafting every single college pitcher who ever existed.
Like the two players that are the best prospects in their system are not guys they drafted, you know, and they, I believe that they would have drafted Kelnick if he'd been there, but they didn't. so, you know, a lot of their system is that sort of high floor kind of player. And that's fine. But they need to continue to find upside, and they need to continue to find, they need to see not just the Noel V. Martes develop, but they need to see.
Is this where we get to talk about Felnin Celestine? Felnin Celestine. I love it.
I see no reason why. Let me wrap this point back into the back 30 here, which is just to say, you need to see some of those people, either those honorable mentions that we named, or, you know, Melkar Perez, who has an incredible arm and has great raw power, but we have no idea whether he can hit it, you know, the higher levels of the minors, because we haven't seen it. Or does Devin Sweet's changeup keep missing bats as he moves up? Or does Tim Elliott, you know, have enough to build on, you know, his potential and his stuff? Can Donovan Walton stick in the bigs and be a useful sort of depth piece? Can George Feliz, you know, who's 17, become, you know, a good sort of power speed combo outfielder? If any of those are true, you know, if you get more of that, then you're looking amazing. Then the depth looks really good. But we're a year away from knowing about a lot of this depth. All right, Kate, tell me about Felnin.
No, Joe should tell you about Felnin, because Joe is the one who brought it to mind. I just worked my sources in the organization to confirm.
Kate flew to the Dominican Republic.
That's true.
She used my impeccable Spanish.
Kate knows corners of the internet to get information that most don't. Like,
yeah.
Like the Pirates website.
Hey, Jason Mackey is such a good beat writer. He really, really propped me up during that whole thing. I feel like it's unfair that the Pirates have such a good beat writer.
Yeah, I mean, Pittsburgh's neat. There's a lot of cool things about Pittsburgh, and one of them is not the Pirates.
One is currently not the baseball. You know what?
No.
You know, they're such a bad team. They have like a top three park. So,
oh, absolutely.
That makes up for it a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, it's top of my list. It is one of the great like sadnesses of mine, because like that was one of the places we were gonna hit this past summer before moving back, was that we did not get to hit the Pittsburgh into Ohio, into the Chicago parks. Like that was going to be a dream. Could not do it.
Okay, but the Pirates are a disaster at the major league level. Everyone knows that. But they have a really fun system. Like, you know, I love Nick Gonzalez, Key Bryan, Quinn Priester is really cool. I love Peggy Leover Peguero. Brennan Malone was one of my favorite arms in that draft class, prep arms. Mysterious Carmen Majinski,
Quinn Priester is going to be a monster.
Oh my god, I love Quinn Priester, and he's a great, great kid too. Like, great kid. So going to be they're on the upswing as far as that goes, and I expect to see them. I honestly, if Keith Law had put the Pirates ahead of the Mariners, I would have understood that more than the Diamondbacks. But I digress. Felnin Celestine, whose name I love saying, if you can't tell. You're going to be so sick of me saying it.
I'm sitting here thinking of T making a music video for The Nightmare Before Christmas, except it's This is Celestine.
This is Celestine. Felnin, yes. Celestine.
Felnin Celestine. Walk-up music.
Oh,
hitting dingers everywhere.
We need a lot more just dissonant vibes in our music, and that is a good place to start.
Joe, explain why we were all so excited about Felnin.
So, yeah, I mean, it just kind of it got brought to my attention, like, what, 2 weeks ago, that this superstar international prospect, you know, like the ilks of, you know, top two, top three prospect in that class, is only following the Mariners on Instagram. So that was interesting. We did a little bit of digging. We asked around and found out that, yeah, he's committed, I guess is what you could say. He has a verbal agreement to sign with the Mariners in a few years. So I don't know where to start. Like, what do you want to know?
For,
I mean,
for a giant bonus. Yeah, like, way more than we've seen the Mariners give out.
It is
that is the rumored amount.
Yeah, we won't throw out any numbers because you don't want to undercut the deal or anything. But it is way more than anyone.
It's that like Seattle Noel V plus Julio put together.
Yeah,
and then some. And it's an area of the. I think like what just excites me is like. Every year, these top international prospect rankings come out. Every year, I automatically scroll to, like, number 10 because I feel like the Mariners are always going to be... They're just never one of the players for the top two guys, it feels like. Like, sometimes they make a big swing, like Noel V, like Julio. But even those were more modest investments. I mean, I think... Julio looms so large right now, but we forget he signed. He wasn't super well regarded. I mean, not he was well regarded, but he wasn't like necessarily
one
of those.
He wasn't.
He was. That's a good way to put it. He wasn't
in
the best tier. Yeah, there were concerns about his body. That was when he was still like a little bit baby fat on Julio.
What we're talking about with Celestine is like difference maker talent. Like these are the guys that. I'm not going to say Jason Dominguez because he's on such a different planet as far as
hype
goes.
No, and Celestine is built completely. He's not a huge, I mean, he's a skinny little dude right now.
But we're talking about that tier. We're talking about like Yoenis Cespedes, Yasiel Puig, that tier of player, top of the
like
top
cover
of the scale.
Stories on Baseball America, like
yeah. But
MLB
anyways,
pipeline,
also
you know,
important
national
note,
attention.
He's 15, so I think this is what everyone needs to know about Celestine. He was supposed to sign with Seattle, you know, if this was 10 months ago, he was supposed to sign with Seattle July 2nd, 2022, but because of COVID. All of the J2 signing dates have been moved back since 6 months. So as of right now, he's eligible to sign probably January 2nd, 2023. But because he turns, according to Eric Loggenhagen from Fangraphs, because he turns 17 in September of 2022, he can just sign with the Mariners in September instead of waiting for his date. The key thing to watch out for Celestine is the new CBA is going to get... negotiated this upcoming winter, and it probably won't be agreed upon or signed upon until December 2021. So long as there isn't an international draft put into that CBA that would make Celestine eligible. I mean, I would imagine the international draft would be around the same time as the amateur draft. As long as they don't rush that into the new CBA and have the first one be 6 months after the
Which
new CBA,
I doubt that
happening.
I doubt they will, yeah. I feel like there's a very small percentage chance
of
that happening.
It screws all of these trainers. I mean, in the long run, it's good for the players and their freedom, if you will, because they're not bartering chips from these trainers. It's a very broken system. But in any case, if these guys have deals that are already, you know, on paper, you don't want to screw them out of that. So my guess is the first international draft would be a year after Celestine.
I agree,
so.
Yeah.
And for those that kind of want an idea of what kind of a player he is, if you watch him, it really does look a lot like Francisco Lindor. He's 5.
I was going to say Lindor, maybe Bogarts.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's going to be as big as Bogarts, but we'll see. He's still really young. He's 5'9" right now. He's 170 pounds, and the bat speed is... I mean, if you go watch this kid's film and then you put it next to 16-year-old Noel V. Marte's film, you will understand why this kid is on an entirely separate stratosphere in terms of future projection, because the physicality is insane from the size of his body. So, but Kate, you make a good point. It will be interesting to see how tall he ends up, because on one hand, he's a switch-hitting shortstop that looks like Lindor, and if he grows 3 more inches, if he grows 4 more inches and he becomes 6'2", then seriously watch out.
You never know, but he'll get to get on that high performance camp, which is something we were talking about George Feliz earlier, and they've appended him to Jonathan Clase. Like, they've had them be roommates together at the Fall Development League, and like, they're very... it feels like they're very into assigning players to kind of follow in the footsteps of players ahead of them. You know, they partnered up Noel V and Julio a bunch, obviously. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Celestine is good friends with Starlin Aguilar, who was the Mariners' big international free agency signing this year. I hear very good reports about both of them as far as, like, work ethic, as far as their who they are as people, just like they're well-regarded, well-respected as people in addition to players. So it's exciting to see them, the Mariners, get players who are not only high-quality baseball players, but also high-quality people.
Players you want to root for.
And yeah, I'll add one more thing, just to kind of drive the hype train even more. He currently trains where Fernando Tatis Jr. was found, where Wander Franco was found, where Marcell Ozuna was found. He's at the premier, the best of the best academy that you can find. So the hype train coming out of Ozuna Sport is very real.
All right. The hype train coming out of the 25 through 21 group here.
Seamless.
Is also real.
Absolutely seamless. Do they give Emmys for segues?
Yeah, potty. Give me that potty.
the golden potty.
The golden potty. Yeah, don't think about it too much. 25th on our list, third baseman Tyler Kenan. Third baseman.
Come on, John. I can't believe you got that out with a straight face.
Joe Rizzo. Reliever, righty reliever Wyatt Mills, righty starter LJ Newsom, and righty, much too early to know, Levi Stout. So we talked a little bit about Stout. Can you guys, for efficiency's sake, since we obviously have larger write-ups on the site, could you guys pick one person you'd love to talk about from this group? I'm going to hand select Joe to talk about Stout, since obviously Joe, you had him in your top 15. Kate, honestly, I would love to hear you talk about Wyatt Mills, because sure. I think you wrote him up today and also had him higher.
I thought we were doing this as, like, goals. So I wrote goals for each, you know, the one thing each player needs to do to, like, take a step forward in 2021. Well, I'm just saying, I'm glad you didn't tag me to talk about Joe Rizzo, because my one next to him is get traded.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. True.
Not a critique of him. It's just
No, no, it means go somewhere. I want him to get a chance somewhere. Because, like, I don't know what else the kid can do. Like, he's hitting. He's working hard. He's doing everything he can do. He's not getting opportunities. Like, free him. Send him somewhere where they will give him opportunities. But I can talk about Wyatt Mills. I just wrote up his 40 and 40 today. So Mills was not selected to go to the alternate site, was not selected to get a call up to Seattle, was sent to, that was in 2019, after the 2019 season. He'd struggled kind of initially in his repeat of Arkansas. So 2018, he got elite season promotion, things didn't go great. And then 2019... started out like, it was a little rough. Like, the command wasn't always there. The velo was a little down. And he really kind of pulled it together and had a few just, like, dominant performances. I thought he was a candidate to maybe get a call-up with, like, the Art Warren and Donnie Walton when all of them got called up. But he did not. They sent him to the Arizona Fall League. He was pretty good there. Played for Team USA, which was, I mean... huge. He went to Mexico. He went to Japan. Like, he had this incredible experience. And I really thought he was, like, on the upswing. And then they didn't pick him for the alternate site. Like, not only did they not pick him to be on the 40 man, like, he didn't even get a chance. And then it became clear that, like, what they were doing with their alternate site was none of those guys were actually going to get called up and play. Like, that was very much a training environment. So he's, like, kind of just left on his own, and he worked his ass off at the warehouse in Spokane. and built up his velo and was popping 94-96 consistently in the Fall Development League and mowed over everyone, which is like what you want to see a guy who's like on the cusp of 27, maybe. I think he's 26 because he was a senior sign when he came in 2017. So he's a little older. But it felt like this was maybe one of Wyatt Mills's last gasps, and he took advantage of it totally. And yeah, I'm a big Wyatt Mills fan now. Throws out of a funky sidearm slot. If he can hit 95 at that and control it, he's absolutely a bullpen piece that we should see at some point this year.
Joe, tell me about Levi Stout. What do we need from Levi Stout this year?
Well, so Levi Stout is, he's built how I like him. He's throws hard. he throws hard. He's 6 feet tall. He's got ride on the fastball. He's got a killer changeup, and he works in a breaking ball. He's another one of those guys that hasn't, I mean, this applies to like half the farm. He just hasn't pitched like in the organization yet. So, I'm really interested to see where he starts, because I think conceivably they might have seen enough from him over this summer to start him in Everett. But you know, maybe not. He is one of the older pitchers. I think he's 22 or 23. So, he's got to throw strikes and he's got to prove that he can start. I think that's the biggest thing, because I've got him in my top, I think I have him 12th, or yeah, I have him 12th in the organization for prospects, just ahead of Sam Carlson. So I'm really buying to the moon Levi Stout Stonks.
We love them. We love them Stout Stonks.
Stout Stonks.
As they are typically referred. Yeah, I think that's a very interesting one to see, because yeah, again, I mean, this is where the depth is like, yeah, I can see why you might look at this group and think, ah, it's a bunch of guys who had TJ, or it's a bunch of guys who haven't really shown something. But in the same breath, it's a bunch of guys who might be about to fully pop onto the scene. All right, let's get into this top 20. We have at number 20, Brian, left-handed pitcher, still a starter at this point, Brian Perez. We have right-handed pitcher Connor Phillips, just drafted. We have righty reliever Sam Delaplane. We have outfielder, narrowly debuted, Jake Fraley. And we have outfielder very far down, still much to go, Jonathan Klaase. I can start you guys, since I put you all on the spot. You guys can pick who you'd like to talk about, because I am going to talk about Brian Perez, who I really like, have always really liked, and is also a really classic sort of example of a guy who 2 years ago, even 2 years ago, was, you know, very, very much one of the only sort of bright spots in terms of pitching depth in the system. And now
he was 14.
I mean, more or less, like, you know, he was in Everett 2 years ago, and like, that was like the big sort of, you know, not a big emergence, but like, he held his own in Everett. He's subsequently been like really improving his physicality. He's a real sort of contact and command and deception kind of lefty. But it is just, it all sort of adds together. He's up into the low 90s now from what I've seen. Albeit, you know, you got to see more in terms of breaking ball and changeup, but at least from the last time we watched him in games, it was pretty impressive. So, like so many of these other pitchers, really for him it is get innings, show that you have taken this really lengthy layoff as an opportunity to improve and build, you know, make yourself into something. And I'm excited to see that, because I think we could see him maybe in a rotation, maybe in a bullpen, in as close as Everett 2.0, High A edition.
He's going to have to. I'd like to see more velo from Perez.
Yeah, certainly.
He has gotten bigger and stronger, but he's just kind of sat at that 89 to 91 for such a long time now, it seems. I'll go next, and I will actually take the other side of the card, and I'll take Sam Delaplane. And what I want to see, goals for Delaplane this year are to get the velo back, like Perez. He was way down 87 to 89 at the alternate site, according to different reports. So I'd really like to see that, you know, get back. He needs to be, frankly, he needs to be, you know, 92 to 95, for the fastball curveball profile to work. He was obviously going to debut last year if the stuff was there. It never was. So I'm the low man on him. I've got him, you know, down at, I think I've got him 28th, and he ended up being 18th on our list. So, this is a big year for Sam Delaplane.
Yeah, and we talked to Delaplane on the podcast, on the main LL podcast a few weeks ago. And he's, you know, obviously, I think he has a decent understanding of sort of his situation. Mm-hmm. You know, he needs to get back to being what he was in 2019, which was maybe the most dominant pitcher in the minor leagues, at least the most dominant reliever in the minor leagues, and doing so at high levels of the minor leagues. So I'm still pretty, you know, still have a sort of cherry view of him, but obviously, I mean, that he is one where, you know, that could flip quick, unfortunately, if he can't replicate that soon.
How about you, Kate?
Well, looking at my note next to, again, remember I did like one line. My note next to Jake Fraley says kneecap Jared Kelnick, and I don't really want to talk about that. So, and I feel like I am always talking about Jonathan.
I feel
Classe.
Like Jared Kelnick is the Tonya Harding of this story, but we'll move on.
I would like to see someone try to kneecap Jared Kelnick. It would not happen. I am going to skip talking about Jonathan Classe, even though I really want to, because I feel like that's all I ever do. And I'll talk about Connor Phillips, because he is probably the biggest. I mean, you could say Classe is a huge unknown out of this because he has not played stateside. But for me, it's Phillips because there's a combination of, like, the Mariners had a ton of intrigue in him. I get the sense the organization is really high on him. And I think he is potentially really, really fun. So for him, I just, you know, the worries always with kind of hard throwing young guys, worries about arm health. But other than that, I'm super excited to see him wherever he might start out in 2021.
Really quick segue. Just at the point that we're at in this farm system.
I don't know. You got to ask John for permission.
It's the same topic. It's the same topic. Same topic. Do you guys remember, like, if we're just talking about 3 years ago, I remember thinking, my God, I hope Nick Neidert doesn't get hurt because we have nothing.
Nick Neidert. That's or, fun.
Like, you know, when Kyle Lewis got hurt, for example. Now it feels like if news were to break, and I'll knock on wood, but if news were to break of one of our pitchers, you know, dealing with an arm injury, it would not feel like the end of the world. And, you know, it'll probably happen to someone in the organization, but it won't feel so crippling.
Yeah.
I remember being physically crushed about Sam Carlson, like physically crushed, that just a sad feeling on my heart about him. It obviously stings now, and it sucked that, but it's more like, oh man, it sucks that I don't get to see you for a year or so, and, you know, it sucks you have to go through this, but there are other things to occupy myself with, and then you'll be like a fun surprise when you come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good way of putting it.
As opposed to seeing Sam Carlson and just like a lead, because that was when the system was still really pretty thin.
It was kind of just Carlson, wasn't it? He was 17, so Gilbert
wasn't
here yet.
Gilbert wasn't here yet, no. And obviously Kirby, Hancock, all of them, none of them.
That's right. I listed all of them. Max Posey was the only other one, and now his...
Had we traded away Yarbrough at that point? Traded away Yarbrough. Yeah, because Yarbrough was gone in 2016. So Yarbrough was gone. Neidert, I think, was gone.
Yep.
Yeah, it felt bad.
Yeah, those two examples, Lewis and Carlson. Now we can... Orc won't be dead.
Yes. I mean, I mean, obviously, I would still feel horrible, like, especially with an injury like Kyle Lewis's. Like, it does make you sick to your stomach just to imagine the pain they're going through and the mental struggle on top of that to get back from a serious injury like that. But, yes, I will say that it would not probably feel as completely devastating as it did back in the... Even when Julio comes up with his arm injury or whatever, gets hit by a pitch and... You know, it sucks and I worry about him, but it's the level of panic is much lower.
Yeah, I think that's a particularly good point of like, it has been rough, you know, not getting to see full Julio experiences, but that it is able to be spread throughout. All right, well, we still get to watch this person. We still get to watch this person. It's a good feeling.
That was the thing about tuning into the minors games in 2019 is like, even if... Like, Kelnick missed some time, too, and he was injured. Like, okay, Kelnick was down, but, like, Joe Rizzo was going off. Or, like, Logan Gilbert was making the start then. Like, there were enough other shiny objects to distract you.
All right, let's get into this top 15. We've got right-handed pitcher Isaiah Campbell. We've got third baseman Austin Shenton. We've got outfielder Zach DeLoach. We've got right-hand pitcher Sam Carlson. And we have righty reliever Andres Munoz.
Okay, Austin Shenton does not get the same question mark after third baseman vocally that Tyler Keenan does.
Look,
fair, John.
Hey,
be
Keenan
fair.
Looked good. He looked like Keenan's, he lost some weight.
Yeah. Here's what I'm saying. I think Keenan has... a little bit more in terms of raw, if nothing else, arm strength and arm skill as a third baseman to Shenton. You know, neither of them move exceptionally, but I do think there is a type of third baseman in Keenan, and there's also
a third baseman who plays third base.
Yeah, I was gonna say even Kyle Seager was a second baseman until they had Robinson Cano, or well, I guess not at that point they didn't have Robinson Cano, but until they just were like, we need someone to play third, whatever. Kyle Seager, go for it. You're not someone who matters that much.
Yeah, and
you're our best position player.
Corey Seager's
for
gonna
a
be
decade.
A shortstop. Another one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's true. let's see. Do either of you want to jump in and snag someone?
Yes,
go for
I
it,
wanna
Kate.
Snag.
Kate,
I'm gonna snag. I'm gonna snag Zach DeLoach.
DeLoach.
Yeah. So here's why. I didn't like the 2020 draft outside of maybe Connor Phillips.
Kate, I'm sorry to interrupt you here, but we got a couple questions in particular
about DeLoach.
Well, not necessarily about DeLoach, but about like what is the future of the outfield beyond the big names of Kelnick, of Kyle Lewis, obviously, of Julio, and of Trammell. Like, what else do we have going? So. Thank you to people who asked about this.
Yes. So DeLoach, I would say, is the most advanced out of them and will be the next one up. And then you have your young Dominican guys in Class A and Feliz. Somebody they just drafted to, who obviously we won't see for a long time, but he has like apparently 70 grade speed. It's Gonzalez, right? Gabriel Gonzalez?
I don't think Gabriel, the
newest signee.
No.
Bolivar.
Bolivar, I think, is the Luis Bolivar is the like incredibly
one?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, so you've got like that crew kind of coming up, but definitely the next wave of outfield guys is led by DeLoach. And I don't know who else. I mean, you don't need a lot, right? Because you've got all those other guys. So
but yeah, I mean,
just DeLoach is probably plenty.
Yeah. That is a pocket where there isn't, you know, it's like depending on where you put Alberto Rodriguez, maybe, but like Trent Tinglestat, like he's obviously not, you know, he's someone we know, but he's not someone who really was pushing on this list heavily, at least until we see it in the higher minors. Yeah. So,
Cade Marlowe.
Oh, yeah, I guess Polkovic, depending on, you know, as a utility or if he's going to be more heavily outfield. Anyway, DeLoach himself, though, Kate.
DeLoach. So, I didn't like the draft. I made that clear. I said it's a lot of boring, kind of low ceiling guys, college guys, safe picks. And I don't know why. I just never warmed up to Zach DeLoach. But I was looking it over when we were doing these rankings, and I was like, this is stupid. I'm being a Keith Law, and except in reverse, because this is a player type I actually really like.
Right?
I'm judging him against a player archetype I don't like, which is like kind of the low-ceiling college player. I think what kind of got me about DeLoach was, like, he doesn't really do anything super well. Like, he does everything fine, but he doesn't have, like, that loud carrying tool that really gets you excited. So that's what I kind of hope to see this year, is for him to distinct himself in one of these ways. But this is a player who, on paper, should be my favorite kind of player. Like, he's high OBP, gets on base, he makes contact, he's a unselfish player. Like, this is the kind of player I love. Once I see him play, I feel like he's going to be the player I do the hardest 180 on. I'm sorry in advance, Zach DeLoach. I am prepared to de-love you.
I think he's a little bit like Cole Calhoun in that regard.
God!
Man, I mean, what an unbelievably unkind thing to say. Only explicitly for Kate.
Put the ball on the tee. Here you go, Kate.
All right. Oh. Joe, after just absolutely just taking a weed whacker.
Now that I've eviscerated Zach DeLoach.
Who do you want?
Well, I will take Sam Carlson, who is just, he's Carl Drago. He's Rocky. He's huge now. I mean, good Lord.
He is... The veins. I mean, his veins have their own, like, zip codes. Like,
that is a sentence
topographical.
I wasn't going to use in my example, but...
I mean, he looks insane. He looks like a bodybuilder.
He kind of is. I mean, he lives at the gym, according to his social media.
He's in Minnesota. Yeah. What the fuck else is there to do?
Buy Nikes,
Minnesota.
Apparently.
Yeah, his shoe
and
game.
Sell Nikes. I own a pair of Sam Carlson's old shoes.
You do? That's dope.
It was a good deal. It was Justin Dunn who got the Griffies that just got dropped.
Yeah. But anyway, Sam Carlson has, like, I have never seen him repeat a pair of Jordan 1s. Like, he's got a different pair for going on, like, 9 months. He just hasn't had a different pair.
He got $2.5 million. So signing.
Yes,
it's a lot of shit.
Yeah, but I'm just excited to see the kid pitch. You know, I was excited to see that his velo was back close to where it needed to be in October. And you know, if he's a guy that is 92 to 95 with his frame and his changeup, and it's a good curveball. The curveball looked really good. He could move fast. I mean, he's been in the system a long time. The system knows what they have with him. Would it stun you if he started in Everett? Probably, but he could move quick.
So another not entirely mystery man, but someone that people have asked a lot of questions about and we haven't seen as much of as, you know, I would have hoped, is our number 10 prospect, because we're in the top 10 now. We have Juan Ten, right-handed pitcher. At number 10, number 9, left-handed pitcher Brandon Williamson, number 8, Cal Raleigh, catcher Cal Raleigh.
Raleigh, like North Carolina.
Oh, there you go. Oh, like... Cal Raleigh with that mustache would be fun. Anyway, sorry.
He tried to grow facial hair before and it looked terrible. Yeah, look, embrace being baby face. That's what Julio nicknamed him.
All right. Cal Raleigh, at 8. Taylor Trammell, outfielder, at number 7, and Noel V. Marte at 6. So we got a few questions in this zone here. First, I want to go to Brian at a player to be named later on Twitter. Their question was, 110's ceiling is undoubtedly high, with the added bonus of the name sounding like my 2-year-old trying to count. Do you think they bring him up quickly or hold him in MILB, limiting his innings until the M's competitive window has arrived? And I think that, you know, let me know if you guys think this is wrong. And I would love to hear one of you talk more about 10. But he does not strike me as someone who is at risk of being, like most pitchers are at lower risk of being service time manipulated, quote unquote, just because there's so much risk in bringing them, you know, in their health at any given time. I think there's less manipulation they run into. I think for him, the Mariners probably have more to gain from letting him keep starting, at least as long as he can. And then eventually, if they need to move him to the bullpen, so be it. But that is where they can sort of get that extra time. But I don't know if either of you have expectations for him beyond that.
I think they probably let him start until he hits his innings limit or until they need an electric arm out of the bullpen. He's already on the 40, so it wouldn't, you know, be difficult for them to bring him up. But I'm sure 110 is going to make his debut with the team as a reliever. But I don't think they want to give up on him being a starter.
Yeah, it does not preclude. Kate, did you have a goal, a specific goal for 110?
What did I write down for him? If starter, work on changeup. As a reliever, call him up. I think that 10 is a reliever. I think he's got a reliever mindset. He has nicknamed himself El Misil, the missile, which I like much better. Let's just snatch that nickname away from Aroldis Chapman. You don't get to have it anymore. I don't feel like it was I feel like that was something that was given to him, too. The Cuban missile, which is, you know, a little historically dicey as well as a nickname. So let's just take El Misil, give it to Wanten, make him a power reliever, and call it a day. We got plenty of arms.
I am personally going to take Trammell here. And in a mildly Keith Law-like mindset, this is a little bit leaning on proximity. Trammell has to show something to separate himself from the incredibly talented and incredibly promising group of outfielders that this organization already has. And part of the benefit for him is that he is very young. He's 3 years younger than Kyle Lewis, I believe. Maybe only two, but it is, I think, close. If it's two, it's closer to three than it is two. And, you know, has two cracks at double A, would have been probably in triple A, if not the bigs this year. It's very likely, I think, to me that he is, pushing into the majors this year in some capacity, and whether that is ultimately that he gets traded again or that he is insurance against Mitch Haniger getting traded or something, I don't know. But I am very, you know, I think we're going to see Taylor Trammell play in the big leagues soon, and we're going to see him play in the big leagues for a number of years. And you know, that is something that we can't discount.
I just wish they'd had a little more time with Trammell to... I wish he'd been traded to us a little sooner. And I understand, you know, why that couldn't have worked out. But I just wish he had had more time and it wasn't a pandemic and he could absorb the organization. Because I think he would be such a fantastic... I think he would have flourished in Seattle's organization in a way he didn't necessarily with the Reds or with San Diego. And I just, Wish he had some of that time back. So yeah, what I wrote down for him was build time machine, which maybe not so plausible. But fair. I agree with you. I think we'll see him at some point this year. He'll get some shots. Again, I wonder what happens with Jake Fraley, and you know, if both of them are just kind of covering time until Kelnick comes up, and it's a good problem to have. Too many outfield prospects is a good problem to have.
But Trammell doesn't have to set himself apart from Lewis, Kelnick, and Julio. Like, there's a roster spot for him out there.
Yes.
He just needs to prove he's better than Fraley.
Yes.
That's true. Well, and I mean, that is the other thing, because, you know, I think the likelihood that Fraley and Trammell are in the Mariners organization at the end of this year is not crazy high. Maybe extending that to to Trammell, Fraley, and Haniger, because it's just like...
I would say before opening day next year. Yeah, is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. One way or another.
And it can be in a very good way of like, oh, all these players are doing promising things again. We got to move somebody because we can't play them all. And we have other places we need to improve. I hope that's the case. I'm very curious to see how that all plays out. Joe, who would you like to hit on here?
I really like Cal Raleigh a lot. I don't, you know, my biggest question for him, like his goal for this year should be prove that you can hit high minors pitching. Because if you can, you probably play at the big league level this year. And he doesn't have to hit 300 at Double A. He doesn't even have to hit 280. Like, go out, hit 270 in Arkansas, 275. Still show the power, and at worst, he's a lefty platoon that hits righties at the big league level. And I think the organization would really like to see him this year. I don't know if the organization is as hellbent on getting him to the majors this year as some people tend to lead on. I think some of those reports are a little misleading. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Cal Raleigh is going to be up this year. But I just want to see the hit tool play enough to where you think, okay, this guy can be like a 245, 250 hitter at the big league level. Because if he can, he's definitely got a spot on the 25 man.
Yeah, I'm not holding the Double A numbers against him, which I feel like he got a little dinged for, that he didn't go to Double A and mash like Joey Bart did. I saw good plate approaches from him when he was... I mean, he was obviously being overwhelmed some. Like, he was getting out of his approach a little, especially when he first went up. He was getting frustrated with himself at times, just getting away from what... But, you know, those are the things that you go through when you go to Double A lot of time. Like, it's a challenging level.
And but my whole...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say... The thing that concerns me is, you know, he had like 120 games at High A in 2019 before getting his cup of coffee, and he was only like a 250 hitter
in Modesto. I do not know why they left him down in Modesto for so long. Like, yeah, I mean, he was not hitting for a high average, but he hit for so much freaking power.
Yeah, he
like,
did.
I mean,
and he
that's
hit for power
just...
at Arkansas too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's what he's going to be. He's going to be, he's not fast enough to, you know, he's not fast at all. Like, he's not going to be beating out any infield hits. Like, he pretty much just has to make the ball go over the fence. So I understand people who are worried that there's like a Zunino type prototype here, but it's not. I think Raleigh is better at identifying pitches. I kind of wish they'd get him to just stick to one side of the plate. I do not love the switch hitting.
Yeah.
I think that's too much. And I'm curious to see in Double A if they decide to abandon that if he continues to have these issues that he was having. But I talked to someone who's a catcher for one of the teams in the Texas League, and he was like, oh yeah, Raleigh, you can just tell, like, Raleigh's got it. Like, the way he puts together an at-bat, and this guy's a catcher, so he sees these guys. He's like, that's a big leaguer. So I trust that. I trust what I've seen in Raleigh. I think there are a couple tweaks to be made. And honestly, I think a lot of the concerns are about his defense. I'm not worried about his defense, especially, I think he's been dinged a lot for his bigger body behind the plate, but he's still pretty mobile back there, and they've done a really good job with, like, the one knee down and getting him to adapt to different situations and just kind of maximizing what his body can do behind the plate. I think the Mariners' catching development is one of the most underrated aspects. So, you know, the turning out Tom Murphy and Austin Nola, and I'm excited to see what they do with Torrens at the major league level this year. Tony Arnerick really knows his stuff.
All right. Well, we've made it to the top five here. We've got righty starter George Kirby. We've got righty starter Emerson Hancock. We've got righty starter Logan Gilbert. We've got outfielder Julio Rodriguez, and we've got outfielder Jared Kelnick. And interesting as a breakdown here, we had a almost unanimous Jared Kelnick number one, but basically a unanimous sort of 1-2 there, really a unanimous 1-2-3, except for a lone number three vote for Noel V. Marte. So, I mean, those three have really sort of separated themselves, I think, in terms of our appraisal, at least.
I didn't have Noel V at number three, but I had him at number four, and I would like to talk about him briefly and just say
go for it. That can be, yeah.
Do it.
That's my guy. Like, I'm super, super high on Noel V. I just saw, it was so great to finally get to watch him play. And again, you can just see, like, he is at a different level than some of these other guys. Like, there's a lot of rawness in his game still, both offensively and defensively. But I thought he acquitted himself as well as you could expect against the big league pitching. Yes, it was hard for him, but he really hung in tough and I thought made some good swing decisions. He didn't always get the bat on the ball in the way that I think he wanted to. But I was super impressed. He just shot way up my ranking system, personal ranking system, with that little brief guest appearance in summer camp and then again in the fall development league. And I have really high hopes for what Perry Hill is going to be able to do with his defense. I think he's got really good instincts and good athleticism. He just needs some polish.
I'll pick one guy from the top five here, and I'm going to avoid Kelnick, and I'm going to avoid Julio, just because they're talked about so much.
That's the thing, is, like, Kelnick, Julio, and I feel like I've talked about all of them so much.
Let me talk about why I have Gilbert over Hancock, because that's that's been a popular little dialogue. I think a lot of the big outlets, you know, are Hancock over Gilbert, and I'm the opposite, and here's the reason. I think Gilbert has almost zero question marks on his profile at this point, besides maybe the amount of innings that he can handle this year, which is the same across the board. He's pitched at the high minors. He's performed at the high minors. He's got four pitches. He's got good command. I just don't think there's anything left for Logan Gilbert to prove, with the exception of, you know, show that you're polished at the beginning of the year so Seattle can call you up. He might even break camp with the team. We'll see.
Logan Gilbert is underrated is one of my rallying cries next to Cal Raleigh.
Rallying cries.
Yeah,
your
I mean,
rallying cry.
Those are absolutely, like, and I felt justified or vindicated because I did a pitcher list draft and somebody took Logan Gilbert earlier than I thought he was going to go, and I cheered, And we have a whole conversation about how not just homers like me, but people across the industry who have been watching Gilbert feel like he's underrated nationally. And I don't know why. Like, small school thing? I mean, but Stetson late has pick. Such a pedigree.
I think it's the late pick. It's the late pick thing.
It was the velo fall off and maybe just not pitching? Like,
it's just kind of... I think Logan Gilbert just kind of has a vanilla profile in that...
Yeah.
And that, like, we don't think that. He's 6'7".
His crazy freaking Vitruvian man limbs, like, no.
Right. But think about when he was drafted.
Not vanilla.
He's Stetson. Okay, yeah. Nobody has seen Stetson play on TV. He's got the most boring name, with all due respect to Logan Gilbert. It's not an exciting name that you remember on prospect lists. And it's just, it's not a face that you look at and say, oh, you know, superstar. It's just, he's got a vanilla profile, but the stuff doesn't match that. You know, he's got the outlier extension to the plate. He's got the big velo. He's got four legit pitches.
Yeah, Logan Gilbert isn't sexy. Like, he's not like a Casey Mize.
Right. He doesn't have that
Michael
zing name.
Kopecker.
He doesn't have that zing name. But he's really good. But I think he's probably 5 to 10 spots too low on most lists.
Hear me out on this. Logan Gilbert's with the Z at the end.
Logan Gilbert's.
Gilbert's.
Yeah.
What if we changed
his
name?
There's multiple of them.
What if we did Logan like L-E-A-U-X gin?
Logan.
Like Logan.
Yeah, I like that.
He'll
absolutely
be the number one prospect in a week. But here's the thing here's the thing with Hancock. He had some arm soreness in 2020. That worries me. He's got kind of a funky arm slot. That worries me. His fastball got hit around by Richmond in 2020. That worries me. So,
Virginia's sixth finest. You know what?
Just like, let me see you do it in Modesto for a month, and then we can have this conversation. But Gilbert has earned a better distinction for me.
I agree, even though Hancock has the pedigree, and I think, like, my goal for the thing that I wrote down for him for 2021 is just burying that 2020 shortened season, because I think that that has hurt him in ways, and I think that maybe a year out from now, we're looking at Emerson Hancock in the same kind of a steal, in the same way that Logan Gilbert, I think, was a huge steal, just somebody who had that, like, slight velo trend down and was available to the Mariners apparently much higher than they thought, or much lower than they thought he would actually go. So I'm feeling like maybe we're going to see the same thing with Hancock. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Gilbert has proved it. The difference between the two of them, to me, I think they're both great pitchers in their own separate ways. Like, Hancock maybe has a little more of that traditional SEC power, like, high pedigree guy. Gilbert is the smart one. Like, he's totally analytical. He's got the crazy extension. Like, he's a little bit, I think, of a unicorn in some ways. And you could definitely see him following the footsteps of, like, a Corey Kluber and just rising up out of nowhere, and then everyone's going to pretend that they were all high on him all along. Liars! We will remember you!
They're going to be totally different pitchers. Like, Hancock is going to be a ground ball sinker guy, and Gilbert's going to be a strikeout, top of the zone, that kind of a pitcher.
But I think, like, each of them are going to be good in their own way.
Right, oh yeah, definitely. But I do think that the Hancock's stuff is better than Gilbert's stuff. Narrative is way, way overblown. And it's overblown because Hancock was the sixth pick and Gilbert was like the 18th pick. And it's just not true. Like,
12th. Wasn't he 12th?
12th pick?
He was a little later. It was a little later.
Yeah. So, but in any case, like, their stuff is not that much different. It's really not.
I mean, the way they get there is different, but the effectiveness of the stuff, I think, is going to be similar.
Yeah. Well, let's hit on a few questions, because we got a few questions about the top here, and then we'll wrap up. I know we sort of touched on Kelnick, we touched on Gilbert and Trammell. Obviously, we've talked ad infinitum about Kelnick, as have really anywhere.
14 for Gilbert, not 12, sorry.
There. Nicholas Mira. Nicholas Mira, we are going to get to your question, but first we're going to hit on Zach Chillum at @ooh_chillum_ on Twitter. Besides Kelnick. Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good stuff.
Pretty good.
Besides Kelnick, Gilbert, and maybe Trammell, what other prospects will make their debut this year? So obviously we named a few, but just going through the list here, are there any that you know really stand out? Obviously we've had Fraley, we've had Walton.
We're not counting Munoz, right?
No, Munoz debuted. Yes, thank you. Yeah, Munoz debuted. We could see Raleigh. Are there any that Mills? Mills is going to debut
Mills
this
for
year.
Sure.
Mills and
Delaplane. Sure.
I think 110. I think 110. Yeah. There's maybe a 40% or 50% chance we see 110. But not a big year for debuts. I don't. Thing.
For once.
Well, other than Kelnick, Gilbert, and Trammell is the thing, really, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
there's not a flood of relievers coming.
I mean, maybe if you, like very low percentage. No. I can't talk myself into an argument for Levi Stout. No.
I think that's
I think that's everybody.
Yeah.
Well,
then let's get to Nicholas Mira here, which is, have the Mariners front office given any indication that they are thinking about the possible relationship damage with Kelnick if they are manipulating his service time, at least with regards to...
John, I think you are the best one equipped to talk about this.
I am... I'm pretty happy to go into this, which is to say... it's a calculated risk, and I think they are, they're going to into this situation thinking, one, the risk of losing the extra control contract-wise on Kelnick is not worth the potential grudge-holding or frustration. Players who have been manipulated service time wise have still signed contract extensions, whether it was right out the gate like Luis Robert or Eloy Jimenez, or whether it was or Ronald Acuna, or whether it was a few years later, likely at a higher rate but still an extension. So I think the Mariners are really hoping that latter outcome comes to pass, and it sounds like, at least from what I've heard, that is that they're essentially saying, we understand he's pissed, but this is what we're wanting to do. And I don't love that, because I think so much of what makes Kelnick who he is that he is a little bit too intense and a little bit more capable than the average human being of seeing seeing things as a slight or a challenge, and I think that is something that's going to make him a really good big leaguer, and I think that's something that is going to make him incredible to root for as a Mariners fan. Is that, like, if you're a fan and you want to go to a game and see the team that you're rooting for try as hard as you care, you should feel very good that Jared Kelnick cares as much as you do. That is going to be the case. So unfortunately, I think it is a calculated risk they're making.
I think everyone always knew that was going to be the risk with Jared Kelnick and his camp.
Right.
He is always going to bet on himself. He's an extremely confident player, and he's not going to take anything less than what he thinks his optimal, 1% outcome is going to be. And that's a perennial all-star. But also, two things on the Mariners front. One, Chris Bryant has already fallen on this sword for teams. He already went through the legal case, so I can't imagine the Mariners are going to have to go through a legal type of a case with Jared Kelnick. And two, yeah, like they're almost certainly going to super two him. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt in the world that he won't be up until at least absolutely. The middle of May.
Absolutely. Well, and if you're interested and didn't see it, Grant Bronson wrote on the site what a Jared Kelnick extension would look like a few weeks back, and I think that unfortunately, at least at the gate, that looks less likely. But at the same time, it also looked at what is it going to cost to not extend him, which is something we're looking at here, unfortunately. All right, I want to hit on one last question here, because we have a good amount of depth in the outfield. Obviously, we talked a ton about pitchers, but we got a good question from Brian from at a player name to be named later as well. Looking at this list as a whole, what position or skill do you think the franchise needs to focus on developing the most going forward?
I mean, it's tough because you don't draft for need, and so you take the best player who's available to you at your draft slot. That's just basic drafting. But that being said, the lack of third base options / just kind of infield in general is not a strength of the club, and catching obviously as well. Like catching, I feel like, honestly, I think the Mariners are pretty well set up at catcher for a while. You've got Murphy, you've got Torrens, you've got Raleigh, like you've got not a ton coming up behind them, but, you know, maybe you sign someone internationally. You never know. Nobody is super rich in catching depth. Almost nobody. So that I'm less worried about. The lack of infield prospects is something that concerns me. Yeah, just if getting Celestine, if they do, would be having a legit true shortstop prospect would be a huge boon for the organization. So I'm really, really hoping that comes to pass.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Kate, Joe, is there anything else you want to hit on right here before we go?
No, this was a super long podcast, so thank you to everyone who actually made it to the end.
Yeah, we went long. We hadn't recorded in a while. We had some takes to get off, but once the season gets going, and really even once spring training,
we've got a bunch of minor league signings we should be talking about too. Like we'll do another pod soon. This is one that kind of got shuffled to the back of the queue.
Yeah.
While other things were happening, and we've had some pretty good podcasts on the big league side with some prospects lately, so make sure to check those out if you haven't. But thank you to everyone who listened all the way through, all our hardcore prospect heads. We appreciate you.
Yeah. And Matthew does a fabulous job of this on the main pod, so I would love to get Joe. Where can people find you on Twitter? Obviously, they can find what you do on Lookout Landing, as well as with Prospects Live. But what?
Monday, find Joe every Monday on the site with a write up of a 2021 draft prospect.
Yeah, but Joe, tell the people where they can find you and your stuff.
So I'm on Twitter at Joe Doyle, MILB. And you can find all my draft content on top of the scouting reports over at Prospects Live.
Fabulous. And Kate?
I'm at Kate Prusser for my personal, but I am usually the at Lookout Landing account. So if you have questions, send them there.
Yes, indeed. And I am John Troopin at JOHNTRUPIN. And we will be back with you guys next time. Thank you for listening. Go Ants. If you need me, you can meet me on top of the world. I'm on top of the world. I'm on top of the world. If you need me, you can meet me on top of the world.
top of the world, I'm on top of the world, I'm on.